Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. What is going on with the lockdowns in our country? Statistician and expert on the Chinese coronavirus, Aaron Ginn, is here. He's a friend of mine. He's very smart, very fair, very reasoned. And you're going to love the analysis that he gives about the corruption of science and the Chinese coronavirus. Please consider supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, the nation's largest organization fighting for freedom on campuses across the country, go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com, and email us freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Aaron Ginn is here, everybody, with the answers to your questions about the Chinese coronavirus. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Computer systems in cars are the new normal. From electronically controlled transmissions to touchscreen displays to dozens of sensors, but you can't fix any of these new features yourself. So when something breaks, it could cost a fortune. And now is not the time for expensive repairs. That's why I have Car Shield. Car Shield has affordable protection plans that can save you thousands for a covered repair, including computers, GPS, electronics, and more. The people at Car Shield understand payment flexibility is an absolute must. Monthly plans can be customized to your needs with rates as low as $99 a month. There's no long-term contracts or commitments, and Car Shield gives you options others won't. You get to choose your favorite mechanic or dealership to do the work, and Car Shield takes care of the rest. They also offer complimentary 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is being fixed. CarShield has helped over 1 million customers, so drive with confidence knowing you got coverage from America's number one auto protection company. For as low as $99 a month, you can protect yourself from surprises and save thousands for a covered repair. Call 800-CAR-6000 and mention the code Kirk. That's 800-CAR-6000. Or visit CarShield.com and use the code Kirk to save 10%. That's CarShield.com, code Kirk, a deductible may apply. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. Joining us again with special analysis on the Chinese coronavirus is Aaron Ginn, friend of mine, and statistician galore. Hey, Aaron. How you doing?
Hey, Charlie. I'm doing doing pretty well, you know.
I'm going to read a headline to you, and I need you to tell me what's really going on. Coronavirus is spreading quickly in 31 states. What is the latest going on with the Chinese coronavirus, hospitalization, death rates? Tell us the facts outside of any sort of activist media bias.
I wouldn't really know how to measure quickly. That would be it's not a very scientific word.
Such a good point.
Americans understand that, like, the original social contract that was given to us about the lockdown and COVID and coronavirus was that we would do a short-term pain to have long-term rewards of managing hospital capacity. As that crisis came really to only unfold in really two places in the country, we have now moved the goalpost again to the case demic. And as we're sort of extrapolating that as well, we now are learning that actually – as even the New York Times was reporting, that the quote unquote false positive rate of a lot of these tests is much higher than we ever thought possible, mainly due to the number of times they're actually cycling through these RNA experiments or RNA testing. So to say that it's like spreading quickly, it's kind of hard to like understand exactly, especially when you know that a high number of the tests are actually false positives or false cases because they're not really infectious. But if you actually, let's just assume that all the cases that we're finding are true asymptomatics or symptomatic cases, the overall prevalence is much lower than we thought in terms of during the March pandemic. Because you can't take, if you remember back in March, we didn't have as much testing. We were focusing testing on symptomatics and people in acute care. So you have to extrapolate the number of fatalities to the total infection. And based on that, it is way higher in March and April than we are today. Today, we are as most pandemics go, actually, is like it goes as a, you know, we see the pandemic as it appears in the highly susceptible, aka high risk population. As they pass away, we now see it, because if you and I got it in December, we wouldn't have noticed it, right? We would have just been, oh, I just have a cold today, right? Or I just feel a little bit like weird. So now we're in this phase of the pandemic as it has passed through the high risk of the population. It's now reaching these other groups of people like college kids, younger adults, and just people that were previously in lockdown mode. So in some respects, like we are still seeing cases because we have a high test sensitivity that's, you know, detecting people that are not really infectious. And the second part is that as people have left the lockdown, as you would know, as you would assume, more people are getting it, but hospital rates are much, much lower. I mean, like incredibly lower. I mean, ICU capacity now is stabilized almost across the entire nation. And we are now seeing the fact that like the way we're measuring this virus needs to change because we have learned more than we know way more back in March.
Well, I think people, to an untrained eye, people believe that, oh, cases must necessarily correlate to hospitalizations and deaths, but hospitalization rates and ICUs and deaths are going down for a variety of different reasons, and you articulated that very well. I just have to compliment you. Quickly is not a scientific term. It's such a media term. The rise is quickly. How do you measure that? Quickly according to what scale? What axis are you measuring that on? It's a perfect point.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a really good philosophical point here, the social contract, which, again, it's that's usually robbed more by the left. You know, there's three types of social contract theory. The three people, of course, that talked about it the most was Rousseau, Hobbes, and Locke. All of them had a very different perspective of the type of social contract that we should have in our society. Thomas Hobbes obviously thought that human beings were awful to each other, nasty, brutish, and short. Therefore, we need an authoritarian, almost a dictator-type government. He wrote that in Leviathan. Jean-Jacques Rousseau, human beings thought were awesome, and he thought that the state should basically allow us to be in a permanent state of infancy. John Locke, I think, got it the best. I think his observation of human nature was a little bit flawed, but he thought that government should protect natural rights, that at all costs we must have a pursuit of liberty. I think you make a great point that there was almost this self-sacrificial promise given to us by the ruling class and the experts saying, it's okay if your business shuts down because long-term you're actually going to be better because of it. The social contract actual promise in the last 6 months post the initial 2 weeks to slow the spread has changed, which is now we just must wait this out perpetually because if we don't, then everything is going to be bad in perpetuity. Can you talk more about, Aaron, about how they have been changed? You call this moving the goalposts. I call this the moving of the Overton window. I think this is also another way to kind of mention this is just they are continuously just trying to justify their own power. Can you talk about how they are using different sets of data interchangeably while they're talking about allegedly the same thing?
Yeah. You know, you're right that there is this moving constantly of like, what is the success metric?
And yes, that's
Europe
a great
has
way
actually
to put
been.
It.
Yeah, Europe has actually been far more, I think, honest with their people about what's going on and like what sacrifices we're making, what trade-offs we're making. I mean, it's actually the Anglo countries that have been quite embarrassing in terms of how they've been treating their citizens and how public health has responded to the situation. You know, both Sweden in the sense of like being the control for the entire world, but also other Nordic countries have been far more transparent, like Norway and Denmark, with their people about like, hey, there, with every policy decision, there are trade-offs. And we're going to be adults about this, and we're going to be honest with you about what the risks are. But we have to move on with civilization. So you see Europe is, even though they're suffering from a true second wave, because the total number of cases is now basically in some countries surpassing the sort of first wave that happened in early part of this year. What happened with Arizona and Florida, we never reached that point in terms of the severity of illness with cases. It was far lower in terms of what was going in New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. But what we are seeing in terms of both the UK and Spain and France is that as cases have drastically increased, we're seeing a little bit increase as you would assume, because you know the prevalence is just like way higher now. So undoubtedly there's going to be some increased hospitalizations and fatalities, but they're being transparent with their people. I mean, like Macron has said openly several times, we're not going back to lockdown. Like that was basically a mistake. And he's actually called out the health minister saying, if you think you need to lock down as part of my cabinet, you basically need to get better at your job. Like he said that in a cabinet meeting.
This is the French.
Right? So Yeah, it's the French, right? So you know, the supposedly white flag French, right? So I think that they like Europe has been able to balance the trade-offs more versus I think our country, the UK and Australia, New Zealand, haven't been able to come to terms with the fact that everything has trade-offs. And public health used to understand that, a lot of public health experts. But the good thing is, like, you know, where we are today is that we understand much more about how to treat this virus. We understand what not to do, basically what New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Michigan did. Don't do those things. Do much more of the things of what happened in Florida and in South Dakota, basically how to like manage severe patients, how to, you know, also continue on with civilization, how to like prevent, you know, rioting, violence in the streets because people don't have jobs and they feel very frustrated and scared. And eventually we will get past this as a nation because I believe so much in Western civilization, Western ideas and the scientific method. But we're in this sort of haze because of the 2 weeks of slow to spread, the massive amount of fear the media was generating, and the inability to understand that I think Americans were shocked to understand actually how many people die a week before COVID.
And now there's no context on that whatsoever. They say 200,000 people, but we, unfortunately, it's just life. A couple million people die a year in our country. Like that's unfortunately that's the cycle of life. So Aaron, I'm going to read you a headline here. And to be honest, I have just lost total faith in the expert class in the Western world because you and I were talking about this loudly and repeatedly back in March, April, and May. I remember the phone calls between each other. New York Times vilified early over lax virus strategy. Sweden seems to have scourge controlled. This is New York Times. I don't know if you saw the story or not.
Mm-hmm. After
having weathered high death rates when it's resisted a lockdown in the spring, Sweden now has one of Europe's lowest rates of daily new cases. Whether that is an aberration remains to be seen. Have the Swedes and the socialist Swedes, were they onto something this whole time?
I would actually say no, because what they did was basically what public health people would have advised, you know, if we didn't have TDS and Trump derangement syndrome, like if we didn't have the politicization of science, or we didn't have the you know, a lot of xenophobia that would sort of been spreading around our nation or around the world. Sweden basically did what all public health people would have done, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Tegnell and Gusecki say openly that what they did was actually not unique. It was actually what they always prescribe, which is what public health people generally prescribe, what they're taught in school, is give people information, trust them that they will actually do the right thing, do, you know, sort of smaller mitigation stuff on the edges that doesn't interfere with society drastically, because you don't want to create unknown secondary effects. And one of the very key principles that's taught in public health policy is do not blame people that get infected. Do not treat them as if they're the scourge of society, as we currently do today, as if it's like their fault, as if like we somehow, you know, have chosen, like as if the virus has some agency behind it and some moral authority behind it. And because what
that
does is secondary side effects, like, it's secondary effect. It's like people won't get treated. People won't come forward. People won't, like, you know, actually choose to self-isolate. Instead, we had this whole moral connotation where people would just hide it and, like, you know, run away. So Sweden basically chose a path that was sort of typical public health policy that we traditionally have done in the past, you know, especially for coronaviruses. But even in the sense of like what New York Times described, which is they said, I believe you said that they had high death rates. That's not even accurate. Like Belgium, like Spain, Peru, UK, like these are all places that are higher, even us, right? So to say that it has a higher death rate is not accurate because like at what time frame do you measure? At the end of this year, we'll be able to look back on the various policies and, you know, be able to judge. And I think that what you'll find is that countries that did lockdowns had an enormous number of excess deaths, not COVID necessarily COVID, but excess deaths of the total fatality rates within the country. You cannot compare specifically COVID deaths necessarily between countries because every country does something different. Belgium has a very generous definition of what is a COVID death and a time range behind that. So UK has a different measure. Even in America, we have states do different things in terms of what is a COVID death. The better way to measure it is excess deaths with a combination of looking at total COVID deaths and then be able to also balance out what other people could have died of as well. And I think what you'll see is that countries that chose lockdowns, that continue to sort of torture their civilization, will find a higher number of excess deaths due to the policy decisions.
When running a business, HR issues can kill you. I know this quite well from running a business. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and more. And HR manager salaries are never cheap. They're an average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, that customize your policy to fit your business, and they help you manage your employees day-to-day all for just $99 a month. Month to month, there's no hidden fees. Cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time in HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/Kirk. Spelled BAM to the BEE.com/Kirk. So, Aaron, I want you to build out more something that you and I have talked about previously, which is the corruption of sciences. The left says that they're for science. They accuse the right of being anti-science. You and I both know that the scientific method is rooted in challenging, you know, pre-existing premises. It's about having unafraid dialogue about what is true and what is not true. The postmodern belief, and this is in critical race theory and critical theory, that the sciences, and this you could see this on newdiscourses.com by two true liberals, not leftists, James Lindsay and Peter Boghossian, they have said this completely, that the sciences are under attack by the postmodernists because they think that science is actually just a tool and an instrument of white supremacy. Now, that might be a little bit too far to accuse every single doctor out there right now of being in that kind of vein. But I do think that that sort of existing framework definitely played a role in some of these scientists and doctors being so vocal and being so committed to dogma, not to actual science. For example, Dr. Fauci has come out and he has said that it is a catastrophic mistake that Florida is opening its restaurants. He has said that school openings are a mistake. I will read you another quote here. This is from Dr. Robert Redfield, who says, quote, Dr. Scott Atlas is arming Trump with misleading data about the Chinese coronavirus, Center for Disease Control Director Dr. Robert Redfield told a colleague Friday. So he's from the Center for Disease Control. Dr. Atlas said this, quote, science is about openly challenging and discussing different ideas, and it is critically important that we start doing that. No real scientist would disagree, and any confident scientist would welcome a debate with colleagues holding different views, Scott Atlas. So what happens now, Aaron, when you have two doctors that disagree? The Biden Democrats think that one of those is a heretic and one of those is a pope. You and I believe that, well, maybe one might be right about something, one or the other. It is the death of empiricism and almost the birth of this very dangerous descent into thousand-year-old dogma.
A lot of scientists are really bad at philosophy, right? This is why the whole sort of philosophy of science, like John Lennox's practice, has sort of developed, because scientists, when they're focused on the sort of empirical part, can actually be quite good and can actually give us data and evidence. But you have to realize that like the conclusions that are drawn from the data and evidence is not necessarily based on data and evidence, because based on wisdom and experience, you know, presuppositions. And this is when Dr. Fauci says that it's a catastrophe. I'm like, that's the one, it's not a scientific word. So what do you mean by that? And the second is like, you are enacting a public policy, which is not in the realm of science. Science can inform policy, but policy is a decision between humans to create social structures, you know, philosophical arguments of what's important, ROI. ROI is not a scientific question. ROI is a judgment call that I believe elected officials should execute, not non-elected bureaucrats. But if Dr. Fauci disagrees with the approach of Governor DeSantis, please be specific about what those things are and what is your evidence based on that, and we can have a debate. But saying things like catastrophe or saying things like it's too soon or I'm concerned, I don't know what I'm concerned means. Like when a public health person says I'm concerned about something, what, right? Like you need to like provide me data. So Dr. Atlas is 100% correct. It's not just him. there, like, you know, Dr. Kuloff at Harvard, professor of medicine and epidemiology, has said very similar thing.
Ioannidis, there's a huge list of these guys.
Yeah, like Dr. Boulot and Dr. Gupta and Dr. Hennigan in the UK. But for some reason in the Anglo countries, because the same problem is also happening in Australia and New Zealand, that we have not accepted open debate and dialogue about this thing. I'll give you two examples. So the Danish Public Health Authority and the Norwegian Public Health Authority both actually have had public debates with their politicians saying, you advocate for things that are not what we say. That basically, we give you data, and it's up to you to make the call. So it's your responsibility. They've actually clearly drawn a line that the Norwegian Public Health Authority said several times publicly, we did not advise you to close schools because we had no data to support that. Denmark has said the same thing, that you, politician, took that. So in some respect, as you know, that's their call, right? It's your decision to take, you know, what data I give you a responsibility. Don't throw it back on me. As a scientist, I think at the end of the day, what will happen is ultimately, as you know, because you're much more involved in politics than I am, that politicians don't like taking responsibility. So who's going to be the scapegoat? Right. It's going to be scientists. And scientists right now are long for the ride because they you know, get attention, they have power. Like, you know, scientists are humans. They have biases and pathologies just like everybody. And at the end of the day, when things come to head, when we see the damage of the lockdowns, when we see the cancer deaths rise, when we see the suicides, we see alcohol abuse, we see kids don't return to school, when we see poverty, when we see hunger, when we see, you know, war, countries imploding, bonds going bankrupt because you don't have an economy, who are they going to blame? The politicians are going to say, hey, that was my bad. They're going to be like, it was that scientist's fault, right? And they're going to be scapegoated, and it's going to be very damaging to science. So we need to celebrate people as the professors and doctors that you have listed, celebrate them because they are pushing forward the actual true scientific method of heterodox thinking. The president, you know, Dr. Ellis is the head of the Corona Task Force now, should embrace heterodox thinking. Homogeneous thinking, groupthink leads to dangerous ideas. Yes, yeah. that religious ideas about something, which again, if you believe that as a public policy matter, that is totally your prerogative. Who do not take the banner of science as if it is your banner to carry and only you carry, as if you are the only person that holds it, right? As the CDC and I think NIH have totally biased themselves, I think, thinking that, you know, they're put in the limelight. I think there's way too much public policy that's coming out of there that they claim is based on particular scientific method, when Ali, it's just their opinion about something. Again, which is okay, but you need to clarify that this is my view of what this data says.
You're looking at this so correctly and clearly, where you have a group of people that are almost the untouchables. They are the class of the enlightened, which because they have a doctor in front of their name, and they have a very specific policy prescription, not a scientific observation, not involved in empiricism at all whatsoever, but now they're in the philosophical, they're in the political realm, where for some good reason, I challenge this a little bit, the American people think very highly of anyone that has a doctor in front of their name. Now, mind you, for whatever reason, dissenting doctors are suffocated and attacked, and we just went through that entire list. So it's only a certain amount, it's only certain doctors, right? It's only certain people that we're supposed to trust. And what I'm very worried about, Aaron, and I think you will agree with this, is that this in no way is good for Western society, because there, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's true in physics, and it's true in politics. And it's also true in culture, because people are going to realize that we were hoodwinked by these power-hungry, self-righteous, foolish political doctors that we're putting forth a very specific agenda for whatever reason we can conjecture, and Dr. Fauci being the chief among it. And the president was correct in the debate. I actually think it was the best part of the debate for him, and I wish he would have leaned in on this even more when he said, wait a second, look at the alcoholism, divorce, depression, and all of this. Yeah. And Joe Biden just completely said, no, none of that stuff matters. It was actually the strongest part of the debate. And this idea that lockdowns are a victimless action has been so disproven. And you and I know this is true through the data. We know this true experientially. You're listening to the Charlie Kirk Show right now, or else you wouldn't hear me say this. And you might have earbuds in. And the best way to listen is actually premium wireless earbuds. And that's why I recommend wireless earbuds from Raycon. They're terrific. The whole team at the Charlie Kirk Show just walks around with Raycon earbuds all the time. And Raycon's newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are the best ones yet. They have 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design, and a noise-isolating fit. Raycon earbuds are stylish and discreet. There's no more dangling wires or stems. Give them a try. Raycon has a 45-day free return policy, so you can make sure they're the wireless earbuds for you. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Kirk. That's buyraycon.com/Kirk for a special 15% discount on Raycon Wireless. Again, make sure to check it out right now while the deal's running. Buyraycon.com/Kirk. And so, Aaron, can you just talk more broadly about how where is the outrage among the other tens of thousands of scientists across the planet? It seems as if there's just kind of this almost sit down and shut up hierarchy now in the epidemiological community. Like, I'm an epidemiologist. I know what's better. You've been wrong about everything. I mean, they were wrong about the models. They were wrong about death rates. They were wrong about hospitalization rates. They were wrong about treatments. They were wrong about everything. And so, and then you also have the Democrats, and I hate to overly politicize this, but they're involved in this virus revisionism. So, so Aaron, I'm afraid that this is going to clash into, this could be something that none of us want to go. This could be a couple hundred year regression where we reject the principles that help build the West, which is the blend of reason and revelation.
The politicization of science, which is, you know, you alluded to some other areas which science has abandon enlightenment principles and abandon sort of broader, you know, sort of evidence-based Western civilization values, like the thing of like, you know, being able to be empathetic and data-driven and like being open-handed about debates, open to heterodoxy ideas, and being a skeptic. Like I identify heavily with skepticism. And even though like I'm balanced out with being a religious Christian, when we get to the point in society where objectivity, which is really what the question is in front of us, is that science is losing its ability to be objective because it's being so politicized, because objectivity is fundamentally what I would say a lot of Western countries are suffering from. That, you know, if you go just go through the line of debate topics in our culture, and fundamentally kind of at its core is this a rejection that something can be absolutely true. Instead, they rather embrace subjectivity. And so science comes in providing evidence and data. And then now we're trying, as the sort of postmodern revolution eats away at the sort of scientific culture. That is like what happened with COVID. Like, so, you know, COVID is a novel, you know, virus, and we're going to debate how novel it truly is. But in terms of sort of the broader scope of other coronaviruses and other pandemics, I mean, this is like Hong Kong flu. This is like, you know, 1957, 1958 flu. So AKA, it's serious, but not the end of the world. So what explains the other behaviors, right? What explains the other end of the world? Like, we must stop everything. We must have no balance. We must have no moderation. And it's these other broader cultural things that, you know, your show covers and other shows like, you know, like Tucker and Dennis Prager, like that all of this came to head at this one moment, right? So this is why, like, when I first got, you know, into COVID in early January and started dissecting this, is like, there were all these other cultural things that were going on that scientists were latching into and didn't realize their own presuppositions. They could not see clearly that, hey, that there are significant costs to lockdown. Hey, like, we have to balance this. Or, hey, like, what is the data? What does it even mean? Like, in the debate last night, like, Trump mentioned the other countries and data tracking, you know, in whatever, how he ever described it, you know, we can debate about this, the accuracy of those specific things, but his orientation was accurate, which is that we are the only nation in the world doing it this way. So the fact to say that we have, you know, 22% of the deaths or whatever, again, that's not even control. You have to control for age. You have to control for when time of the pandemic happened. There's a lot of things to control for. But we are the only ones having the sensitivity of the tests as high as you do. Like in Europe, they're about, you know, it's actually exponential. As you increase the number of cycle times, it exponentially increases the sensitivity. But the number of cycle times they're running is almost 50% less than us. And some countries like Spain are now requiring both a scan of the chest and symptoms to be counted as like a basically COVID admission versus, you know, we're just like testing everyone and everything. And it's like, oh, it's a, you know, if I come in for And I know this for certain. I can confirm this from doctors. Yeah, exactly. There were a lot of doctors that messaged me saying that, like, everyone that comes in as a COVID patient is here for some from other reason, and we don't treat them for COVID. And so there is a majority, a silent majority. I believe it's a majority. Of course, we don't have polling on this, but that is my experience, is that the majority of scientists and doctors think that what is publicly discussed, who people are cited as experts, they do not agree with. They think that they're hysterical, that they're not based in reason and rationale. Like, they're concerned about COVID, and as we do. And I actually think our public response was anything but treating it seriously. So I don't understand when people say our public response or public policy response was not serious. I mean, we literally shut down the nation, and we have cities that still don't have indoor dining. We have, like, I don't get how it's like we didn't take it seriously. We banned travel from countries. Countries that did take it seriously would be like going to Belarus or Sweden, maybe, or Japan. You can say that they didn't take it seriously because they did less than us, right? But we totally took it seriously. And I believe our policy response will be, at least in some states are fine. Other states took it way too far, mainly the Democratic states in the Northeast, because you can see in the excess deaths, it's just like you could totally see that they took it too far. That at the end of the day, lockdowns will be one of the greatest mistakes in public policy, in modern public policy, that we have ever done.
What's really interesting is that a lot of the same people that have been peddling the Chinese coronavirus hysteria, they are skeptics. They're David Hume skeptics when it comes to religion. And they don't like theocracy. They don't like theology. They don't like dogma. And yet when it came to this period of 6 months, they became more religiously fundamentalist than an evangelical Christian to this stuff. Yeah. Where all of a sudden it was all of the David Hume is ought problem.
It's reducto ad absurdum. You eventually lead to the absurd if you're overly skeptical.
Of course.
Like, it goes too far.
Yeah. Precisely. But I think it's actually very helpful to not forget that and not use it. And I think that you need to be a skeptic in life. However, the point I'm making, though, is that these people that have made a career out of criticizing those of us of faith, you and I, and the Bill Maher's of the world, for example, right? His whole life is trying to bring David Hume to the 21st century. He had the film Religious or whatever it was called, right? He basically was asking the same pointed questions that Hume would ask. It was all about trying to deconstruct religious dogma, right? Same for most of the activist media. And yet when it came to a moment where the professional medical class started to act with religious fervor and almost like zealots, all of that skepticism disappeared, Aaron, right? It was as if they're skeptics against people of faith, but they're zealots when it comes to the medical community. Why is that?
But because skepticism is, I mean, he's trying to bring David Hume. I mean, I know, like, in terms of broader skeptic community and broader intellectual community, I mean, Hume is widely read. So, I mean, I don't think you need to bring Hume to the world. Plus, bringing a specific person to the world is quite religious, not very skeptical. You know, everyone has mistakes in their philosophy. Like, you know, Rousseau, I would say, is like, he had, you know, 10% of his ideas were great and then 90% were bad, right? So, you know, everyone has a hit and misses. And you can't just pick one guy and say, like, he is the figure, right? Because that's quite religious. I think this goes back to the sort of philosophy of science question when it comes to COVID and our culture, is that if you understand more philosophical frameworks about how people think and behave, you would realize that humans are fundamentally hierarchical. They have an orientation to something they constantly defer to make judgments against. And for Christians, it's the Bible and Jesus. But for atheists, it's something else. You can't escape that behavior which humans have. Every single human has, whether it could be if you're a Christian, it could be family, it could be country, it could be you know, science, it could be you know, politics, it could be environment. Like, all of the humans naturally create a godlike order and in whatever thing they think is, like, most important. So when it came to COVID, that became a very sort of zealous appeal, constant appeal, as if, like, that was the only thing that mattered. And the unfortunate thing is that the secondary consequences of that zealotry has led to basically we've lost all of our gains in extreme poverty. Like we're basically back to the early 90s now. Like we're gonna have probably a million more TB, malaria, AIDS deaths in Africa. Like there's not really any way to measure this pandemic, COVID specifically, in a way that's like actually appreciable in terms of we actually creatively save lives. The lockdown deaths will, in terms of all the actuary analysis, in terms of how like people now they're looking at things we actually know and measure very well, like malaria, for example, how many times we treat that or how many times we get TB vaccines. Those are things we actually know and have very good data on outcomes, hard data, not like COVID, which is a complete mess and chaotic in terms of how we measure that. We know fairly certain what's going to happen because so many people have not come to the doctor to receive vaccines or so many kids are not in school or not being fed. For example, in Africa or lower income communities in America. So the zealotry of willing to ignore that is quite profound, which is why the scientists you see like lockdown skeptics is remarkably a bipartisan issue. It's made up of lots of liberals who see the zealotry, who see the sort of insanity, centrists, libertarians, skeptics who have no place, independents, because they can look at the data and be like, wait a minute, like this is not the way we should approach this issue because it is serious, but it's serious for a very known select group of people like that you can look and see and you can tell that they're actually high risk. The age stratified risk between you and me and, you know, an elderly person nursing home is 1,000 times difference. So that's right. Pretty significant, right? Like you and I are more likely to have a severe outcome of COVID about as much as if we have an accidental fall and die. Like it's basically about the similar some amount of risk versus someone that is in a nursing home. Again, you could say sheltered in place already. Someone who's in a nursing home is a much more controlled environment that you can implement some things. So like DeSantis, going back to Fauci's criticism and Dr. Birx's criticism, I don't even think they understand what DeSantis is even doing. Like, because they say things as if it's like they don't even read his actual policy. But if you read everything he's doing in nursing homes, if you read how he's actually trying to protect the vulnerable, implementing widespread testing, having COVID recovery wards, which again, actually Birx and Fauci, as far as I know, never actually recommended, but actually saved a lot of lives because if you're recovering from COVID, you could potentially still have infectious viral loads. So putting you elsewhere from a highly susceptible population is way more wise. And so instead, it's like COVID only. So I give you another example about how some people are seeing the light. Bill Gates was very much on the pro lockdown, as direct as severe as possible. Since his Millennium Report, which measures poverty and other pathologies, was so depressing, he has changed his tune because he now sees the data and goes, wow, this policy was a disaster. He has not said that publicly, but if you watch his interviews, it's very clear that he has changed his mind. Yeah, it's very clear he has changed his mind. So
he's more committed to dogma as a scientist because he doesn't want to go back on his friends. But if Bill Gates came out and said, wow, this was an awful mistake, he would change public opinion by 20 points overnight. But he actually hates Donald Trump so much because he's a religious zealot. His religion is different than your and I. His religion is defeating Trump and conservatives. Because that's because Gates, despite seeing the data, he will not speak out. Please continue.
Yes. The ironic thing is so much of our culture is like this weird kabuki theater that like everyone knows the elephant in the room, but no one wants to talk about it. And so my personality is to poke at it and see what happens. Believing that like lockdowns were basically kind of a BS policy and didn't work and like had a lot of these extra costs. I think widespread opinion on people actually believe that, but no one actually wants to say it versus if a politician came out and said, hey, sorry, I did the best I could. We had bad data at first. I have better data now. Here's what we're going to do to fix the situation. I think the approval rating of that person would skyrocket because Americans are very forgiving as people. What they don't like is being lied to. They don't being told that something is true and not true. And that's the thing is like I'm just waiting for somebody to say, I think close person to DeSantis. I think eventually DeSantis is going to say like, okay, yeah, that was a big mistake. Like the media and everything was pushing it. He already said we're never going to do it again. But by that admission, you're also subtly saying that the lockdown was not a good idea. But I'm just waiting for a public official to finally say it. So that we can just sort of move past this like weird acceptance of something like an alternate reality. It's like we're in the Matrix, right? And I mean, but COVID is lockdowns are not the only thing. There are a lot of other things going on in society where it feels like we're in the Matrix. We're like, what is going on? We're like you know, like criminalization now or like crime is political. Like that, if you have a certain identity, it's not a crime now. Like it's just it's crazy. It's just like, you know, like what world are we in? Like what pill did you take?
Well, Aaron, what is the website where people can find out more information about what you're doing and the data that you're tracking?
You can just follow me on Twitter, AGINNT at Twitter, or you can go to rationalground.com. That's a site that I contribute to. That's right. You could say the first lockdown skeptics blog in America. So devoted to reason and balance. It's actually
you and I were lockdown skeptics from the beginning.
Yes. So.
Well, Aaron, you're doing amazing work. Thank you for joining us. And in closing, last question, is it time to fully reopen our country?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, with reasonable mitigation, high-risk populations, but we also should not tell people things that are not true that supposedly mitigates the risk, like masks. There is not a lot of evidence it does things. So do not tell people that if you are high risk and you wear a mask, somehow you're safe. It doesn't work that way. Like, that's not the way that studies have been done about that. We have no idea. We have good physics evidence, but that's not the same thing as the practical application of a mask in public spaces among people who are untrained to use it. So we need to be honest and fair with people and treat them like adults. Do not treat them like their children, like as in, you know, these magical beans will work. Right. Like that's pseudoscience, it's witchcraft, like shake my broom and the virus disappears. So we have to be realistic with people and tell them things that actually work, like washing your hands, distancing. If you wear a mask in a crowded space, I would say the evidence shows that may do something, but it's not the same thing as other public health people saying good as a vaccine. That is profoundly irresponsible because that is not true. Vaccine science is way more, has significantly more evidence behind it. And it goes through rigorous testing than like what masks have been done. And this is why the Nordic countries, other European countries have been much more balanced about masks because they look at the data and like it's just not there. So yeah. not also recognizing the fact that the secondary consequence of that. But in terms of schools, in terms of businesses, in terms of like free society, absolutely. Human rights don't stop. Because there's a new novel coronavirus that actually has a fairly low mortality rate compared to like, you know, the Spanish flu or something like that. Like human rights do not stop. It didn't stop, you know, during wartime. It is something that is universal and good. So we as a society have to accept that there are going to be different downsides as with all various decisions that we make in public policy, and the downsides of continuing the pattern of locking people in and out, scaring them to death, will fundamentally lead to much more significant pathologies than anything that COVID COVID will bring to our nation.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for joining our program. You're doing amazing work. Keep being skeptical. We love it. Thanks for fighting for truth.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks. See you soon. What a great conversation that was with Aaron Ginn. If you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support, charliekirk.com/support. And if you want to win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, hit subscribe and a 5-star review, screenshot it, email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon. God bless.